900 AM WURD, your information station, committed to solutions. I'm going to ask the individuals who are waiting patiently on hold to bear with us. We did want to give an update. The Move 9 are men and women who have been in prison since August 8, 1978, following a massive police attack in Powhatan Village. This was 7 years before the government dropped a bomb on Move, killing 11 people, including 5 children. The story since then has been a story of legal challenges, has been a story of denied appeals, has been a story of people asking when will justice be served. And joining us on the line is one of the Move 9, Phil Africa, who's going to kind of update us as we approach. I don't know that you necessarily call something like that an anniversary, but we are approaching August 8th, which will be the day that all of this took place. Good morning, sir. Thank you so much for taking some time with us.
Thank you for calling in. And my revolutionary greetings to all those who are active in the work to eliminate this rotten system of injustice. On the move.
Tell us a little bit, for people who don't know, and after all this time, people should, but recap for us the story and where you kind of stand right now, because there have been several opportunities for challenges and what have you. Why are the Move 9 still incarcerated?
Because of the hatred the system has for anyone who stands up for what's right and what's just. You've seen it just recently with even the president being forced to apologize to the police department. You know, it's like when you look at this system, it's not just those like people see as revolutionaries, but it's anybody who stands up for what's right. These jails ain't just filled with move people. It's filled with everybody. Poor, those of color, you know what I mean? It's filled with everybody. So when you look at move, you see the 70s, Frank Rizzo stripping the Panthers naked in Philadelphia, making statements that he wouldn't have no militant groups in Philadelphia. And with move coming along, a handful of men, women, and kids, you know, they figured it would be easy to intimidate. But long live John Africa, we put our faith in what's right first. And them not ready to stop that made us a target for the city of Philadelphia.
Tell us, for the listening audience that may not know, because it has been quite some time, it's been 30 years. Tell the listening audience the story, what happened that day that led to the incarceration of the Move 9.
Well, after a long period of time of Move women being beaten, babies being murdered in Philadelphia by the police department, we made a stand and said no more. We had taken enough and made a stand and said no more. During that stand in 1977, we stood up against the police commissioner, Frank Rizzo, at the time, and he was highly embarrassed because of his embarrassment of having a year-long standoff that gained worldwide attention. And at the end of the confrontation, found out that the so-called weapons movement was inoperable. That we had actually stood them off with nothing but our faith and our commitment and our belief. They came back in 1978 on a vendetta to murder more people. Of course, in the event of this attempt to murder us, a cop was killed, and they claimed several others was wounded. During this time, no MOVE member was ever seen with a weapon. No MOVE members ever firing a shot. In fact, all the witnesses outside of the police department testified that all the shots they heard came from behind them. Even reporters took their cameras all through the house and focused them on the buildings behind them, you know. So after coming out, the judge, even the sentencing judge, admitted he didn't have the slightest idea who shot this cop. But was still sentenced, you know, normally, railroaded to the court, given 30 to 100 years. Now, after a 30-year we come up for parole and are constantly denied. As of right now, Eddie Askers received a 2-year hit. Michael Askers received a 1-year hit. Delbert Askers received a 1-year hit. And we're still waiting on the women to get their reports back. Point is, after 30 years, with all the prisoners' recommendations that we be paroled, on the strength of the district attorney of Philadelphia, MOVE members are still sitting in jail. I mean, we'd have maxed out on the 10 to 20 for the homicide. Even if people wanted to trip on the fact, they say, well, maybe MOVE did it. Of course we did. Even with that fact, legally, we have already served the sentence.
Well, this call is from the State Correctional Institution at Dallas and is subject to monitoring and recording.
Yeah, but because of the system's vendetta against Move, we're still being held in court. And you're still being held in jail. And you're fired. This is the point with political prisoners all over this country. Those who stand up for righteousness is always punished for it. You know, we don't get the the respect from the masses, that, like I say, a celebrity, a music celebrity, or somebody else would get. When it comes to people like Silas Secor, Sunni Ali Coley, Lynette Peltier, Fred Hampton, Mark Clark, people stand up militantly for what's right. You know, we don't get that kind of support that, like, I say, somebody who makes a hit record can, or a movie star can. And it's really sad.
Folks, we're spending some time with Phil Africa, one of the Move 9, who now have been in prison for 30 years. And part of the question that continues to come up, and I haven't really heard a good legal answer, 30 to 100 years, you were convicted of third-degree murder, correct?
That's right.
Two things, and help me out with legally understanding this. First of all, how can 9 people be convicted of the third-degree murder of one individual? And second, 30 to 100 years... it's excessive, even if guilty of third-degree murder, yes?
Yes, it is. Third-degree murder at the time we were sentenced carried 10 to 20. So otherwise, we maxed out on that 10 years ago. You see what I'm saying? So now when you got 9 people being charged with one cop being shot with one bullet, and this is Philadelphia, understand, in the 70s, when it had just been civil suit against the filed against Philadelphia police for racial brutality and corruption. This is the time this is taking place. For a judge to say that he found 9 people guilty, 9 of 30-degree murder at that time is unheard of. So it's obvious that even the judge knew Move members wasn't guilty of that crime. His rationale, which wasn't legal, but his rationale was because we were a family officer in the house and did not surrender to the police. We were responsible for creating a catastrophe, therefore we always guilty for whatever happened. But you know that's crap. You know what I mean? Don't tell me that you want to charge me with shooting somebody if you know I didn't shoot them. You know, it's not right.
But so what's, from a legal standpoint, and again, a lot of different things have come up and have been discussed as it relates to this case. The first being that Officer Ramp apparently was killed by a bullet that was traveling on a downward angle, correct?
It was.
Now, so that in and of itself, with individuals from Move, a downward angle from a direction that, based on what I have read, could not have come from the house, what was the argument legally for that?
Well, if you remember during our trial, a lot of people might not, but during our trial, the district attorney actually changed the autopsy report in the courtroom. This is tampering with evidence. In full view of the judge, even though Move members had protested against it, they still allowed it. He actually changed the autopsy report twice by trying to say that, you know, the mortician made an error. The point is, our case is the first case in the history of the United States that a crime scene was knowingly destroyed by the police department, which means that 2 hours after we was arrested, they leveled the crime scene to the ground. So there was no chance to get the angles of the bullets, where people was at. Of course, we are below ground level, so it's impossible for the cops to be shot by anybody in the house. These are the points that we brought up during trial. Destruction of evidence. Myrna Marshall, the judge who was hearing our destruction of evidence case, dismissed our case from her deathbed. She was suffering from cancer, loaded up with drugs, but because it had already been orchestrated for Move to take the fall for this case, every judge and everybody put their hands in it, just followed on with the conspiracy. And it's not hard to see how it can happen. Because right now we got examples in front of everybody. Attica, 43 people dead. They blamed it on all the prisoners. Years later, cops come to find out everybody was shot by police. The Panther murders in Chicago, Fred Hampton, Mark Clark. It took 30 years for them to admit that these brothers were in their bed asleep when they was gunned down. All the shots came from outside the apartment. It's the same with Move. What we have to do, sit in jail for 50 more years before people realize that we should have never been here in the first place? Because, you know, we do feel better about this. You got a sentencing guideline, a legal sentencing guideline that says each person must be sentenced, you know, according to their record. Well, you got Janine, you got Debbie, who's never been arrested in their life. Everybody's sentenced to 30 to 100 years. It's impossible that they use the sentencing guideline.
Now, one of the things, and folks, again, we're speaking with Phil Africa, currently incarcerated, one of the Move Nine, has been serving time for 30 years, all for third-degree murder for one police officer who evidence indicates could not have been shot by them. But, you know, based on what we're hearing and what's being presented, that was the time that they were living in the 70s. One of the questions I have, and one of the things that I've heard, and I understand standing on principle, but one of the reasons the parole board states for denying parole is that there is no admission of guilt, there is no no remorse for the crime. Now, I understand that your stance is you didn't commit the crime, so why should you apologize for it, or why should you express remorse? But after 30 years, if that would help you get out, is that something you'd consider?
Well, no, it's not. Let me say this, and I'm going to say Lawler John asked for this. Unlike a lot of other groups and people, you can't be a person that's wrong can negotiate their freedom. See, they can barter their freedom. We can't. We're innocent. It's impossible for me to say I'm wrong and still be right. You can't do it. That's the problem with people with the system, why the system.
This call is from the State Correctional Institution at Dallas and is subject to monitoring and recording.
And why the system hates move so much is because we won't compromise our belief. We won't compromise our stand on being right. We work hard to do the right thing. Like I said, even in jail right now, we have the recommendation of all the prisoners to be released. The prisoners, these are people that's had us in custody for 30 years saying, these people don't belong in jail. But you've got Len Abraham, Rendell, the parole board, political people who are keeping the doors closed on us. We got people like cops, take Alfonso Deal. He testified and made statements back in 1978 that we didn't shoot the cop. For that, he was bummed off the police department, received death threats from police. In 1985, when a bomb was dropped in Philadelphia on May 13th, you had another cop testify that he heard stakeout cops laughing and joking about shooting move members coming out the burning building. You know what I mean? He was drummed off the force. He received death threats from other police. See, they're the real thugs. They're the ones people scared of. They're not scared of move. And when you talk about taking responsibility, we can't keep letting the system get away with doing what's wrong. For us to take responsibility for something we did not do is to make the system look right, and they'll continue to do it. This fight move is waging ain't just for us. It's for everybody. John has explained to us that you cannot find freedom by leaving the building and entering another. Otherwise, if you compromise your commitment to freedom just to get out, you go right from maximum security prison to minimum security prison. It's what people's living in on the street right now. But like I said, when they taking the rights they take from us in jail, we know freedom doesn't exist in prison. But look at those on the street. Every day, they take more rights from people. Every day, it's more of a police presence in the community. Every day, there's another person.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
Another person being shot or murdered on the streets. Not just us and something.
Obviously, with time coming short, and closing statements that you would like to make on this topic. And, you know, we pray that you stay strong. We'll continue to try to keep the information out there.
The only statement I would make is that people stay strong. Be more fiery, be more militant in the stance they take, because these rights they're taking from people, it's God-given rights. You shouldn't just allow a legislator.
There's 30 seconds remaining.
You shouldn't let people say just because it's legal, don't make it right. And that's what people have to really understand.
Stay strong.
Appreciate the support and you know, everything that people have out there for us.
You stay strong. We'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, on the move.
You take care. Phil Africa, folks, spending some time with us, obviously, from Dallas. You heard the update. You know what? This is the second or third time. We spoke with Mumia Abu-Jamal a couple years ago from incarceration. I'm not exactly sure where he was up in upstate in Pennsylvania. Spent some time with him. That's irritating. I understand that they do it, but if you're sitting there and you're alerting people to the fact that they have a limited amount of time, but you keep interrupting the call, you're taking away from the time that they have left. You have 60 seconds remaining. That was just 5 seconds you just took away from my 60. Then you do it again at 30. I'd imagine you do it again at 10. This has been an ongoing situation, folks. It's another one of those situations that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's another one of those situations where legally you would think that there would be some challenges that could come up. Now, admittedly, folks, I am not nearly as informed about this case as I am about some others. On the surface, I have some questions and some concerns. We're going to take a quick break, get you caught up. The counselor, Tariq El-Shabazz, who is our legal expert, of course, on these types of topics and co-host here on Wednesdays, is going to give us a little bit of information on this and his take on it as soon as we come back from this traffic update. Callers on the line, I appreciate all of your patience. Getting to you as soon as possible. Oliver, you're up next. It's 900 AM WURD. Wake up with Bill. Video streaming at 900AMWURD.com. Check us out. It's a new look on the website. We got the chat board up and running. WakeUpWithBill.com. A couple new videos. Happy to... What did this all happen when I went on vacation? I just become... He had to sit down and critique Bill's show segment.
I didn't say it.
Bunch of haters around. And now I got to wear one of the Rhythm Nation headsets that apparently Janet Jackson has when I'm doing the show. Or I could just stop turning my head, man. Like, straight on. Apparently I move around a lot, so I'm going to have a Rhythm Nation headset from now on. That's hot. Here they're trying to make me do is look silly on the video stream.
I don't think so.
You have wardrobe malfunctions up in the studio. The counselor, Tariq El-Shabazz, joins us on the line. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, sexy Philadelphia single.
Hey, man, don't hate. I'm blowing up.
I bet you are blowing up. You and a bunch of other people. But let's start here. This is the problem that I have with a lot of people that call themselves social activists. Because this is a case in which so-called social activists should really be involved in. I don't think under any stretch of the imagination there's any legal theory that would allow these individuals, all of them, to be in jail for 30 to 100 years. Let's talk about some of the questions that you raised. The first thing is, the only theory of law that would allow an individual to convict 9 people, 7 people, 5 people, 2 people of third-degree murder is the theory of conspiracy. It has to be some conspiratorial relationship, some agreement, fancy word for agreement. But even if you have an agreement, the individuals that are convicted of conspiracy have to take a substantial step, a step towards committing that particular crime. Did they get the gun? Did they get the bullets? Did they hand the person the gun? Did they participate in stealing of the gun? Did they barricade an individual so they can't? Did they tell them how to aim? They had to do something that was an active, affirmative action to participate in that. Now tell me how in the hell that many people participated in the shooting of one bullet in one officer. So that under that set of facts, that's an impossibility. Let's start there. Secondly, in order to get a sentence of 30 to 100 years, when at that time third degree was 10 to 20 years, you would have to have more than one crime in which the person was convicted of, and then run it consecutively. That is, you would give them 10 to 20 for the third-degree murder. And then if it was conspiracy, you may have given them 10 to 20 or 5 to 10 for the conspiracy. That would be 15. Then it would be another crime, possession of instrument of a crime, 2.5 to 5. You would put them 2.5 on top of that to the end of it. So you get to the minimum of 30 years. I don't know all of the charges in which they were convicted, but it would have to have been something to pile it up to get a minimum of 30 years. He's absolutely 1,000% correct. I don't know of any guidelines that existed then or now that would give you that particular type of sentence. So there are various problems with that. Now, has anyone ever been convicted of homicide, of third-degree murder, and not pulled the trigger? Absolutely, based upon that conspiracy theory I talked about. And some of the conspiracy theories are so crazy and so far out of whack, but there are theories that, in fact, can hold water in terms of the judicial system. What am I talking about? You have 2 people that are on the same side. They're brothers, for example. They are engaged in a shootout with another group of individuals. The brother of the person charged with the crime is shot dead by a bullet from the other people. From the other people, not from his brother, from the other people. His brother can be charged with the homicide, even though he didn't shoot the bullet, even though he was shooting at the other people, and even though it was the other people that shot the bullet that killed his brother. Now, that, under that, that theory seems crazy because, first of all, it's his brother, so it's clearly he wasn't trying to shoot him. They were on the same team. They were right next to each other when the shots were being fired, and they were shooting at another individual, and that individual's return fire, and that return fire killed his brother, so how could he be engaged in that? Well, there's a theory of law, and the law allows that if you're engaged in that type of activity, that is, the shooting at other individuals, there is, you accept the responsibility of the possibility, and it's a very high possibility and high probability, that someone is going to get hurt or can be killed as a result of your actions, the actions that you're engaged in. Not just the bullet that you're firing, but the actions that you're engaged in, and subsequently, you can be charged with the murder of your own brother. Now, this has happened in Philadelphia a number of times. In fact, I was involved in at least two cases in which I represented someone whose brother was, in fact, killed when they were engaged in a shootout, and they were charged with third-degree murder. We had a more sensible jury and a more sensible judge, and so I wasn't in that. Fortunately for them, and I guess for me as well, they weren't convicted of that, but they still faced that particular type of theory. So those type of theories exist, unfortunately. They exist. With respect to parole, you're asking questions about parole, and he's absolutely correct. One of the things the parole board looks to is for what they call remorse. And remorse is tied into, unfortunately, someone admitting that they did something, even if they didn't do it. And if, in fact, you're not prepared to say that I'm sorry for what I did in terms of engaged in the shooting of a police officer, then you're not going to get out when your parole comes up.
So you couldn't say, Counselor, you couldn't say, I'm very sorry that this happened, recognize the severity of the situation. You have to admit guilt.
Well, you have to admit guilt. Some people will allow you to get away with that, but in this situation, they're not, because this is, and I'm not one to talk about political prisoners, because I think people overuse the term, but this is political. He's absolutely right. This is clearly political. It's clearly political. It's just an impossibility to convict everyone of that particular charge, because you would have to know what happened in the house. Suppose, for example, there's someone serving 30 to 100 years that couldn't leave the house. Couldn't leave the house because what? Maybe they were being fired upon. I'm afraid I leave the house, I might get shot. Maybe they were told they better not leave. Maybe they were busy hiding under the bed. Maybe they were busy hiding in the basement. To the end of it, these individuals, somebody that may have been doing that particular action, how in the hell can they be guilty of third-degree murder? They weren't participating in this at all. What evidence, and I don't know the case as well as I know some other cases involving Moore, but what other evidence did they have that each of these individuals conspired and participated in this murder? What? The fact that they were in the house? I heard him say that the theory was that the judge relied upon was that they were all in the house. That got to be the most absurd hole-in-the-wall theory that one can hear. So clearly, if that is the theory, it's telling you this is political. It's clearly political. See, my only question is, my only problem is that I never have a problem with advocacy. I think advocacy and challenges to a system should keep the system honest. That's why you do it, to try to keep the system honest and make sure that the system does what it's designed to do. My problem is I think that a lot of times our advocates, our social advocates, our people that are so outraged, they're outraged about the wrong things. They're outraged about the wrong things. And when you're outraged all the time, nobody pays attention to you. But if you're an individual that looks at each individual case, that analyzes that case and becomes outraged when it's clearly an injustice that has been performed by police department, district attorney's office, or whoever, then people are more apt to listen to you. It's like I tell people when they talk about doing appeals. You know, you get some people and they do appeals and they say, well, I want you to appeal these 8 issues. There might only be 2 issues that are real issues. The 6 issues are just things you're throwing in there. My philosophy has always been, why do you throw 8 issues in there when they're going to ignore the other 6 issues and they're going to look at those other 6 issues like all your issues are no good, as opposed to put the real, genuine issues down there and allow them to analyze those issues? It just doesn't make sense to draw your attention to those things that aren't significant. And I say all that to say, man, that we got a lot of people that call into our station all the time, man, and they talk about their outrage. Well, this is one of the things that should be on that outrage list, because it's clear to me and anyone else that has any inkling of justice, man, that knows anything about this legal system, that you have to take a very serious look at this, man, and make the correction. Make the correction.
Counselor, how come this isn't one of those cases where you hear about some law school or some class, excuse me, that takes it on as a case study and analyzes it, and it ends up receiving that level of exposure? I mean, this very clearly seems to be an abuse of justice.
Except, man, the reason why it isn't is because it's so political. See, when you talk about Hurricane Carter, for example, it wasn't political, it was racist. You know, and some people argue, well, if it was racist, political, whatever, apple, oranges, but at the end of the day, it was racist. This one is a political hotbed about a movement that had a particular political and social philosophy that went against the philosophy and the political philosophy and the social philosophy of Philadelphia at a time when it wasn't popular to have those particular types. And it was a movement that actually galvanized a lot of people even against it. Even people that would have been for, you know, what MOVE was standing for, they were kind of turned off by some of the things that occurred involving MOVE. Now, that right or wrong, that's what occurred. Now, because it's such a hot political topic, for example, such a hot political powder keg, you're not going to find law schools or innocence projects taking on that issue. Because at the end of the day, you may be able to demonstrate, and I think you'll be able to demonstrate it in this case, that legally there are some problems that allow this boat to be sinking. And therefore, we should allow each of the passengers on that boat who's been on that boat for 30 years to get out of that system, to get out of Dallas, to come home, because this is an injustice. However, to do that, you have to attack the political climate. You have to attack individuals, as he indicated, that are in office now that were around during the time that this thing occurred. And I don't think that people are ready to take that on. Instead, they want to take on something where, and rightly so, and I don't have a problem with that. Let me be clear. They take on something where I can get a DNA analysis, and it clearly indicates that that person is innocent. And that's noble. I think they should take on that as well, but that's less political.
Thank you, sir. Counselor, we appreciate it. I'll see you real soon.
All right, man.
You take it easy. Always appreciate having access to somebody who is so legally schooled and can answer the questions that we have. A lot of times I stumble into the correct legal analysis, but having access to one of the top defense attorneys out there, Tariq El-Shabazz, is certainly our pleasure. People have been waiting on hold for quite some time. A lot of things have been bouncing around, and I sincerely apologize. Oliver in North Philadelphia, we're coming to you in just 1 second. Phone lines wide open now, folks. You can jump on 215-634-8065 is the local number. Toll free, it's 866-361-0900. It's Wake Up with Bill. We've talked about Mayor Nutter and Plan C and the drama that apparently, could be coming to the city of Philadelphia very soon. We've talked about the Move 9, did an interview with Phil Africa from prison. We have talked about Unity Day and the movement, and that's another perfect example. Counselor Tariq El-Shabazz was talking about. You got people who are out there scrambling and starting a Save Unity Day movement so they can go party on the parkway when some of these other issues, significantly more important, but can't get the exposure. 215-634-8065.